And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning, just approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 14th of October. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. We've got a really busy 3 hours coming up for you with the usual mix. We'll keep you across all the big stories, not just locally, but across the country and beyond as well. So it's all here for you over the 3 hours. We have some nice features for you, some people to chat to. And of course, we want your views coming in throughout the course of the morning, contributing to the show. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, whichever suits you best. 086 60 25,000. Of course, you can send in your WhatsApp voice notes as well. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25,000. And if email is your thing, we like to get them too. comments@highlandradio.com. And if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight replay, and get involved in the conversation, send in your emails or your WhatsApps and we'll pick them up and carry them through to the next live show. And of course, you can watch the show in its entirety on our YouTube app. So that's good for watching on your mobile devices, but also your smart TV or your Fire Stick, if that suits you, wherever you are. We're on our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. Let's start with a look at the newspapers and just really confirmation of what we knew. And it's just to underline the fact that, and ironically, we were talking about this, I think, on the Friday panel, that the electricity companies are shafting us. We have the highest electricity rates in the entire Europe, as far as I'm aware. And also, too, the gap between how much electricity companies are paying for electricity and how much they're charging us is as wide as anywhere. So, listen, this stuff about the infrastructure and the wind and getting it into the system and all that kind of stuff, it seems a bit of nonsense, really. They're just gouging us because they possibly can. I'll read on here in the Irish Independent. Electricity companies in Ireland are failing to pass on reductions in the cost of wholesale energy to consumers and businesses, a new report has found. So, you know, if you're going, well, why didn't we get the one-off cost of living measures? You know, that was really, much of it was to do with electricity. Businesses out there are struggling. They're struggling to keep the lights on, quite literally, and they're doing so because of gouging. The International Energy Agency found that retail prices in Ireland are three times higher than wholesale prices, one of the highest gaps in the world, not just Europe. So what effectively that means, they're charging us three times what they're buying it for. The agency also found that the gap between what it costs to produce energy in this country and what it is sold for is one of the largest in the world. The report confirms that Ireland has the highest electricity prices in Europe because we have the largest gap between what it costs to produce energy and what the consumers pay. The disparity in Ireland was the largest, with the energy component of retail prices three times higher than wholesale prices, it states. The IEA is a Paris-based intergovernmental organisation that provides policy recommendations and data on the global energy sector. It's made up of 32 member countries. Sinn Féin MP Lynn Boylan accused electricity companies here of price gouging, saying the report exposes a shocking reality. Now, like, is this not the kind of thing, and maybe I'm being naive or stupid, because one of the biggest expenses we have is electricity. Especially if you have to heat your home as well. Like, we're learning information here. They're charging us three times what they're paying for it. We have the widest gap between wholesale and retail in the world, and we pay the highest electricity prices in Europe. Is that not something like the doll gets recalled for or something? I know it's sitting, but you know what I mean? That there's some sort of an emergency meeting of the doll to say, hold on a second, what's going on with energy prices? How are we, or what can we do to stop are people that elected us being ripped off? Am I naive in thinking that's how politics should work, that someone, some TD, some whatever it is, a committee, makes this an emergency situation with this new information for the benefit of the people, to act on behalf of the people? We can do nothing as individuals. We can't even protest by saying, I'm not paying my electricity, it'll be cut off. We can't sort of say, right, well, I'm going to shop abroad because it's cheaper. We're locked in here. You know, is this not like some sort of a national energy emergency, or am I overstating it? Because those numbers are crazy. Like, we're supposed to be doing cartwheels because the biggest energy provider is not increasing prices. Well, why would it increase prices when the gap between what it buys electricity for or produces it for and sells it for is three times the difference? You know, I would have thought this is something of an emergency. But anyway, maybe I'm being naive, or maybe I feel that politics should work in a way that it's just not designed to work. But that's what I believe representing people looks like. Get on a big issue that's important and unjustifiable. But anyway, it won't happen, but you would hope it would. Turns out maybe farmers aren't to blame for all the dirty water, by the way. Because nearly half of all rivers and lakes are in poor state. This is despite the fact that farmers are, to a great extent, cleaning up their act. The water quality continues to deteriorate. Ireland's, this is in the Irish Times, by the way, Ireland's rivers, lakes and estuaries have deteriorated further, with almost half of them now in an unhealthy condition. Just 52% of over 4,000 water bodies monitoring over the last past 5 years achieved a satisfactory rating. The other 48% were so polluted, contaminated with chemicals, choked with algae, deprived of oxygen, lacking in species variety, or physically altered and damaged, that they rated below minimal acceptable standards. The data compiled by the Environmental Protection Agency from 2019 to 24 shows a decline in standards from the previous period monitored, 2016 to 21, when 54% were in satisfactory shape. Reading on here, because I want to get to the bit, and it seems to be, it's going to be pretty buried here, where there's less farming pollution in the water, because I think this is quite critical. Dr. Emer Cutter, director of the EPA's Office of Evidence and Assessment, said the findings were very disappointing. Our rivers, lakes and estuaries are the lifeblood of our landscape and support our ecosystems and our health and well-being, but they are struggling, she said. But as I say, I can't see in the article here, and I don't have time to read it all through, but in terms of what you might call farming pollution, that has reduced over this time period, but the conditions of our waters as a whole has worsened, which I think is important because farmers seem to get blamed for absolutely everything. Remember we talked about the offer of 10 grand per family of asylum seekers to go away effectively. Well, a letter offering 10,000 euro per family to asylum seekers to return home has been sent now to all 33,000 people seeking international protection, the Justice Minister has confirmed. The figure is five times the previous offer and is part of the government's Get Tough policy on asylum seekers. Get tough. Here's my, how's this get tough? There's money, please, if you don't mind leaving. But you can stay if you like. But there's 10 grand. It's hardly getting tough, is it? But anyway, the figure is five times the previous offer and is part of the government's Get Tough policy on asylum seekers, who cost the taxpayer over 1 billion a year in a situation that's added to the accommodation crisis. Those who take up the offer will be will get part of the money on a prepaid debit card as they're leaving. The rest of the funds will be transferred to them when they return to their home countries. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan stressed that the offer would only be made for a limited time and that the top rate is only available for those who do not enter the lengthy asylum appeals process. A sum of 2,500 euro is being offered to individual people to go home. It's estimated to cost 122,000 euro per person to process an average international protection application. This includes costs for accommodation and food, social protection payments and healthcare and education. Earlier this month, the government confirmed that it was making a new and improved offer to those in the international application process to entice them to return to their home countries. But I'm not really sure it's that's getting tough, is it, really? It's like, well, I don't want to make a clumsy metaphor that might sound inhumane. I don't really, that wouldn't be my intention. Just a little heads up for you, not to worry you, but just to make you aware of what might be going on at home. A teenager suffered fatal brain damage after inhaling the contents of an aerosol deodorant, an inquest has heard. This is the Daily Star. The tragic circumstances of the death of Sarah Meskell, 14, at Children's Health Ireland in Crumlin on September 25th, 23, was heard at a sitting of Dublin District Coroner's Court yesterday. The inquest heard that the second-year student at Colastiamora in Ennis, County Clare, died from irreversible brain damage 5 days after she became unwell at her home after sniffing the contents of the deodorant. It was also noted by the pathologist who conducted the post-mortem, Michael McDermott, that there is a long association between the inhalation of volatile substances such as those containing deodorants and a sudden unexpected death. Now, it can play with the heart, obviously, and trigger a heart attack, or it could exacerbate an underlying health condition. And the reason I mention it is that you do see it now and again popping up as a trend on social media. And these things have been around since I was at school. There were other little things. You remember, well, I don't want to say because I don't want to influence anyone, but there was other things that would go viral as you could go viral in the analog days. But it's just a case, you know, worth having a conversation maybe with young people in the house that they might not realise that it can be so tragic and devastating and lead to death or serious injury or brain damage. And as I say, there are little trends that go onto social media plugging this type of stuff. So just as I say, not to be fearful, but just to be aware. The Sun this morning: traumatised hostages bravely smiled through the pain yesterday, tasting freedom at last after their Hamas hell in Gaza. 20 emaciated, wounded and mentally scarred victims of the terror group's cruelty were delivered to their families following 737 days in captivity. Many put on a show of defiance, grinning or making heart signs while draped in Israeli flags amid elation across the country centred on Tel Aviv's hostage square. Others ran to loved ones in tears as their historic release heralded hopes of lasting Middle East peace. But Hamas sparked fury by releasing the names of just four of the 28 dead hostages due to be handed over, leading to calls for the Trump peace deal's suspension. They did actually hand over four coffins, but they have to be, I suppose, independently looked at back in Israel. Yet nothing could dampen the elation as the first seven freed men, then 2 hours later, the remaining 13 were handed over to the Red Cross on the Gaza-Israeli border. And at the same time, in southern Gaza, busloads of Palestinian detainees and prisoners, some sentenced to life in Israel, were returned there as well. So listen, we could argue the ins and outs and such and so on, but the less people dying in this world, the better. Now, be careful of this one. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror, and I've got a personal interest in this one, if I'm going to be completely honest. Sneaky scammers are now impersonating Lidl on TikTok in a bid to defraud social media users. Adverts, which claim to be from the budget supermarket, as they're described, I don't think they're a budget supermarket, but anyway, selling a range of high-value items for knockdown prices, have been uncovered by the Irish Mirror. They include one for the iPhone 17 Pro Max, a Canon camera, an e-scooter and a DeLonghi coffee machine. Now, I was caught out by this. I'll be completely honest with you. I was on TikTok. Something I wanted popped up. The price was reasonable, but not so cheap that you'd be suspicious. And I was in such a rush, I bought it. And I'm going to get the money back from my bank, but It looks the real deal, right? And they say there's a limited amount, and I talk about scams all the time, and we'll probably be talking about scams before the end of this show. But I fell for this one on my life, hook, line and sinker. So just be careful yourselves. The revelation comes just weeks after the paper exposed fraudsters who'd been impersonating Boots Ireland to sell unregulated products that falsely promise rapid weight loss. But these ads, they look legit. You click through, the website looks legit, and they have you by the ghoulies. So just be careful. As I say, I'm only being honest. I got caught out by that one because I was in a rush and I wasn't concentrating and I was multitasking. And do you remember yesterday we talked about how you're more likely to be done in a scam if you're multitasking? Well, that's exactly what happened to me. But thankfully, there is some protections with certain banks. If you pay for goods online and you don't receive those goods within 2 weeks, you can get a refund. So all's well that ends well. Still a bit of a hassle and it is still a little bit embarrassing. But you know what? If you get done, you get done. Now, hospital staff and Gardaí have been accused of failing to take the suspected spiking of drinks seriously after an incident involving the family of a local politician. Now, this is something that comes up from time to time here on this programme, and I think there is sometimes a little bit of eye rolling, a little bit of disbelief, and it does not surprise me that this might extend, you know, to hospital staff or Gardaí. Councillor Audrey Buckley joins me on the programme now. Councillor, thanks for your time today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and it is something that's happening all of the time. But there is sort of, I think people are reluctant to believe people who claim their drinks have been spiked.
Yeah, look, and I think, you know, I've heard about people being spiked before, but I've kind of, you know, glazed over it because, you know, when it doesn't happen, something like this doesn't happen to you directly. You obviously have empathy towards a person, but you kind of, you know, it's only when you're in it and you realize how serious and actually how dangerous this kind of behavior is, and that it has to be addressed. Because for myself, you know, family member it happened to, and I was in it 100%, and I just couldn't believe how normalized it was to people saying, oh, sir, so she was spiked. Oh, sure. Yeah, that happens. They come in here all the time. I'm talking about hospital staff, you know, working in the hospital where she was brought by ambulance. Yeah, it was horrific. It was a horrific incident, and it's more horrific that we're normalising it.
Mm. And it's a crime, right? So there's a window of opportunity potentially to gather evidence, you know, be it a guarded questioning when that's appropriate, but also, you know, bloods or whatever that might be required. Is there a protocol or any protocols in place to gather evidence and treat it as a crime?
Well, unfortunately, no, not far enough. I've been kind of told that there was and there is, but no, I was shouting from the rooftops to get bloods. So first of all, when the person was taken to the hospital by ambulance after one drink in a nightclub, when she collapsed on the floor, thanks be to God, she was with friends. You know, we always tell our kids, stick together. In this incident, you know, absolutely. She was with five of her friends. They all had the same story. So about the consumption of alcohol wasn't the case here. So the ambulance took the person away. She was blacking in and out. So she got to the hospital. I got there about 20 minutes later. Nobody was seeing her. I was being told that when she was blacking in and blacking out, you know, very upset, saying, did somebody touch me? Did something, what happened? Mm-hmm. And then she'd black out again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could tell myself this wasn't alcohol. There's something in her system. So unfortunately, the scheme of things, the doctor actually didn't physically come and look at her till 5 a.m. But between that, I was getting frustrated. So I did call the guards myself at 2 a.m. for them to come to the hospital to take a statement and to take bloods, maybe, because nobody in the hospital was listening to me. I kept asking if they would please take some bloods because God only knows what was in the person's system. So the guards did come to the hospital, and they were very, you know, kind of dismissive. First off, when was the last time she got into this kind of situation? I was asked, what has she taken? Has she taken stuff before? I was asked.
This sounds like victim blaming, or at least you could feel like
drink,
that.
Yeah. Terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I was very calm. I didn't want to be thrown out of the hospital. And it was a very serious situation. So I had to be there. I had to be in it for the person. And when I asked the guard if they would please take some bloods, and they said, you're in a medical facility, they will deal with that. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's all I got out of the guards.
See, I would imagine that there are quite a lot of people present at ED over a weekend who are intoxicated or have consumed something knowingly, right?
But yes, absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
This is not familiar. You, I suppose, there has to be some sort of a protocol, right? That it's not like the boy who cried wolf, right? So someone who, and we've all done that too, right? Have overindulged or something, or tried something that we probably shouldn't have, versus someone who's been the victim of the crime. I don't know how they figure that out. Is it take bloods from anyone, everyone, and then follow?
No,
I don't know. What do you think, Audrey, would be a way?
So I guess after the incident and when everything happened, you know, afterwards, you know, just looking back and thinking of it, I just couldn't believe that. I felt like it was in the twilight zone. I just, first of all, I couldn't believe that this was being normalized, you know. I said, this isn't right. I was getting texts from other people. I was meeting people saying this happened to me. Anybody I've met, none of them had reported it, because it was something like they went home in a taxi because they didn't feel well, passed out. When they woke up the next morning, they realized that something is wrong, that it wasn't alcohol consumption that did this. So and what the issues are here is there's no clear process to ensure immediate toxicology testing. Mm-hmm. When someone puts their hand up, the people that were with the person out, or a parent, or you know, anybody responsible can just say, I think this person has been spiked. There has to be a protocol or a pathway. You have to, I think the person has to be listened to. That was a huge issue. People weren't listening.
Yeah.
They were just assuming, you know, and the Gardaí as well. There has to be a structured pathway for the Gardaí when they take a statement, and if they think that the victim is incapacitated, not through alcohol or drugs, but something else, something has to be done. There has to be the pathway then for the drink spiking crime that has probably taken place.
Yeah. So, but what this actually means, though, is that if we have any statistics at all, they're certainly not full in terms of the extent of this.
Absolutely.
And also we have very little action, information, convictions, and very little deterrent.
Yes, and I spoke to an Gardaí afterwards, people that I work with in the community, an Gardaí Siúcháin, and they would love to see a pathway, a protocol, because there's not. I spoke to a friend who's a doctor. She dealt with someone 2 months ago who actually got injected with a spiking. But there's no stats there. That's why I went to TD Seamus McGrath, asking him to bring up a parliamentary question on this to the Minister for Health and the Minister of Justice. And like that, he's asked for a report. He wants to see the statistics of how many people have been spiked. Has there been any prosecution? So he has asked these questions and he's just waiting back on a response.
Yeah, I'd also want to know then too, you see, because in a way, this person was the victim of a very serious crime, but how many others end up being sexually assaulted or something else happening to them?
Yeah.
And if we don't believe people or we don't investigate spiking instances, are we factoring in spiking? You know, are we go to court then? Do we and argue that they did it consensually? We've got no evidence. It's not really treated as a, you know, it's just compounding then even more serious crime, because, you know, people are probably going to be disbelieved further down the track.
Yeah. And I agree. And if you did see somebody in the state that was spiked, you would see the person is incapacitated there. They black in and out. So, you know, it's life changing for people. If anything happens to them after, you know, it's just horrific. It's horrible to think that as a society, this is where we're at. And something has to be done about it, because just from a small circle of people I know, it's amazing how many people that they have mentioned to me that it's happened to them or to family members.
Listen, there was someone not too far from where I'm sitting here today. There was claims of spiking instances in Derry not so long ago. So it's happening all the time. It does come up. And I wonder from division to division in terms of Angada Síochána, but certainly maybe from hospital to hospital, is there a difference in how these cases are treated?
Well, I do know when the person got their report, they're exiting, you know, the medical report, when they left the hospital, nothing was mentioned about, you know, a family member thinks that the patient was spiked. Like, nothing was mentioned. And it wasn't like it was asked so many times that bloods were taken that they thought the person was spiked. So, you know, that's very sad that happens, you know. That people aren't being listened to, and like you said, it's life changing for people, and the incidents that can happen because of it is just horrific and life changing. And you know, this is bringing things to the front. I know hearing in Cork we have Mary Crilly, she's a sexual CEO of a sexual violence centre. She's been pushing it, which I had no idea, you know, previously, because why would I, you know, even it wouldn't be on my radar. Now it is. So hopefully we'll be working with Mary Crilly and Seamus TD McGrath, and to just bring this further and not let it sit there. Something has to be done. We have to have proper protocols to protect our children when they're out there, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, listen, thanks for helping us spread the word as well, because I am definite there are families listening who've been through this, and it can be very frustrating because you're a lone voice then, aren't you, in an awful situation. Councillor Audrey Buckley, thank you for your time. All right, look after yourself. Bye-bye, and best wishes to the person who was the victim of that crime. 086 60 25,000. Unfortunately, I know some of you have experienced this or know someone close to you that has. Maybe you want to share your experience of it. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Traffic bad in Letterkenny this morning. I'm not sure if there was a breakdown or something, but lots of you texting in. Another caller says, the first caller on this says, traffic dreadful in Letterkenny. I left the house in Glencar at 8:35 a.m. still at Orchard Pub, High Road 906. It's bumper to bumper. Hi, Greg. Donegal County Council have major questions to answer this morning. They've caused one of the worst traffic jams in Letterkenny history. This, they said, would happen. Works at the hospital causing major disruptions. All over works have to stop now, they say. Right, okay. Another caller says, if we stop paying our electricity bill, then they will bring it down until the people stand together. They can do whatever they like. Don't forget paper roll, not politicians. Look, yeah, but there's no way people can organise themselves to a point whereby it would hit the electricity companies. Firstly, we're across different electricity companies. Secondly, you could have 500 people that do it and they end up banjaxed, right? Their credit rating destroyed and no one else doing it. Refusal to pay is not going to work. Yes, it might feel good, but it wouldn't work. The people in Burnfoot waking up again to no water. Shocking. I often wonder, did the people in the same locality ever get moved into their houses after the bad floods 8 or 9 years ago? Does it only happen in Donegal where people are treated so unfairly? Yeah, you can feel like that sometimes, can't it? Where I live, farmers are very much to blame for the pollution that's happening. There are almost 8 million cattle in Ireland. Where is that waste going? Yes, like all walks of life, there are some good farmers, but a lot of them are reckless in their actions. But the metrics are the level of farming pollution has reduced, but the level of pollution has increased. So, I mean, that's just basic statistics, isn't it? Right, welcome back to the programme. Now, a new Customs Cutter vessel is to be launched shortly in conjunction with efforts to stamp out drug smuggling along the Irish coast. Revenue and An Garda Síochána yesterday relaunched Donegal's Divisional Coastal Watch Maritime Initiative. Detective Superintendent Sean Grant is responsible for serious crime in the Donegal division. So this is a relaunch, Detective. Good morning to you. But what does that mean in essence?
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, I suppose nothing new, Greg. It's really something we've had, an initiative we've had for decades around the country. And really, it's just a relaunch and a focus to increase public awareness and vigilance along our coastline. I suppose really a neighbourhood watch, community alert extension to the coastline. And it's what Coastal Watch really is a collaborative approach between the likes of Revenue, ourselves, including our partners in Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau, Naval Operations, Coast Guard and voluntary agencies. So again, I suppose we have 3,000 miles of coastline in the jurisdiction of An Garda Síochána. And again, it's just focusing our public eyes and ears on the coastline, looking out for targeting issues such as drugs, contraband and weapons, given the unique location of Ireland on the European frontier.
And I suppose to send the message to those responsible that it is not open season.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. I suppose we have a lot of assistance that we regularly get from our public, and given we have a lot of agencies working along our coastline that feed a lot of information to our island dwellers. We have a lot of farm activity, fisherman activity, boat club members and inland fishery operatives. And again, so by extension, it's obviously very difficult for any agency to keep eyes and ears and watch on 3,000 miles of coastline at any one time. But by extension, tapping into our public help and our agency support, that really helps us to gather a picture of what is happening on our coastline, just in that complex, as I said, that European frontier that Ireland sits at, and just again to send out the message that we're not a safe space for contraband operations.
I suppose in terms of size and range and you know, ability to deal with different weather. You have to keep up with those that are smuggling drugs, and I presume with this new bigger cutter that's coming into operation, you'd hope be able to do that.
Yeah, and I suppose, Greg, you're right. Organised crime knows no boundaries. There's always technological advances. But again, we have had some very recent successes, multi-agency successes in respect of contraband and particular drugs importation. And again, any additional equipment coming on scene is to target the likes of those continual, I suppose, challenges. But our equipment is keeping with, I suppose, those advances. And again, while organised criminals might not recognise boundaries, a lot of those groupings and criminal groupings represent the common targets for a lot of agencies, Revenue and Garda Síochána, and our coastline services. Mm. So it's just trying to just that bit of synergy, getting everybody working together and facing the right direction, trying to thwart that activity.
You know, obviously you can be out and about, and I hope that works as a deterrent. But it's a big money game, right? So that means there's big technology involved. You know, dropping off products with trackers on them, and then finding the right time to go and retrieve that and all that type of stuff. So from a technological perspective, and obviously you're not going to give anything away, are there other signs that you know, outside of the eyes and ears of the coastal community and the work of the cutter on the water and the rest of the equipment at your disposal, like, are there ways and means to try and intercept some of these deals or transportations of drugs? Do they use particular frequencies? Is there any advances we can make technologically in that regard?
Well, I suppose even going back to basics, Greg, sometimes it's the simple things that help detect a lot of this activity. And again, you mentioned packages. And again, that'll be part of our ask of people when they're looking out, is to just look for something simple as packages, unusual items in the water. Again, even, you know, unusual light activity at nighttime, general, you know, unusual querying about boats and purchasing. So sometimes the simple things detect and indicate that something is not quite as right. And as I said, you're correct. Those sort of higher level intercepts can be used, but I suppose the message of the coastal watch is that sometimes it's back to basics in respect of, and if something seems out of place, generally it is. And I suppose the one thing about our local communities, generally they have a good finger on the pulse of what is happening in the community, what is out of place, and it's just trying to put in place a sort of a trusted network where that information can be relayed back to safely and confidentially, perhaps, where people might have a fear of repercussions for themselves. Mm. And I suppose that's the main message today, is just maybe trying to emphasise just to our public, just to, you know, if they do see anything, Greg, and if I may take the opportunity, just again that to re-emphasise our confidential line 1800 666 111. That's the Garda confidential line. Obviously, any Garda in a Garda station can take any message as well. And again, we have the customs drugs watch number as well with our partners. So, as I said, while we are as multi-agency approach trying to keep up with technological advances, sometimes it's a simple indications on the coastline.
Well, at the end of the day, they can use
something's not right.
1 billion euro technology to get drugs as far as our coastline, but they have to come on and appear on the shore somewhere, and that's the most basic thing. Do we have a sense, obviously, with our ports and our airports being incredibly heavily policed, and there are still people caught trying to transport drugs into the country through those means? Like, and there is a lot of drugs in Ireland. We can't pretend there isn't. How much do we know? What percentage might be landed on our shores or at our piers or what have you?
I suppose, look, it's common knowledge that our shores are being utilised and exploited. And again, if you look at the vastness of the coastline, Greg, it's very difficult to I suppose put a number in respect of that particular aspect. We just happen to live in a particularly unique part of the world. A very beautiful part of the world, but obviously that just given that European extremity that we're at, with an international border within our jurisdiction as well, there is complexity to Ireland. And again, I suppose where there is complexities and policing challenges and policing jurisdictional changes, that will always be exploited by criminal networks. And I suppose that is for collectively for all of us to be agile enough to maybe respond to that. And as I said, we have very good collaborative approaches nationally and internationally, and even European.
But
and
the bottom line is worldwide. Listen, people living along the coast, they know every movement effectively. They know every boat, who it belongs to, what it's doing. That's the vital part of this here. It's the local on the ground information who can help to keep these drugs out of our kids' hands, and not just kids, but you know what I mean. And just remind us of that. Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
Sorry, no, you're exactly right, Greg, and I suppose that is the main message of Coastal Watch. It's just looking for I suppose, a network we've always had in place just to maybe kind of refocus people on keeping an eye out and maybe just to have the confidence to come forward as in confidence or otherwise and let us know, because I'm very strong that people generally have an idea of concerns in their community, what has gone on in their community, and maybe things that are out of place. And generally, if something looks out of place, it probably is, and it's just a matter of report that into us. And that might tie into you mentioned about the higher technological capabilities that are available, and any little nugget sometimes can just tie in on a bigger scale.
Yeah, and of course traffic's being monitored and there are certain indicators and all that type of stuff. All right, that's the stuff that's happening all the time. Detective Superintendent Sean Grant, responsible for serious crime in Donegal Division. From our newsroom, Donna Marie Doherty, she attended the launch of the Coastal Watch Donegal yesterday. A lot covered there. Donna Marie, what was your takeaway from the relaunch?
Yeah, that is pretty much, Sean, got it covered there in a nutshell. I suppose that they really went into how these drop-offs are carried out. So it is carried out between a mother vessel and a daughter vessel, and these mother vessels can be massive. They're like bulk cargo ships. So they're very, very huge boats. But the daughter vessels could be something as small as a rib. So they were saying that the way that they carry these out is that the mother vessel won't stop. It will just start dropping these packages overboard. They'll be concealed. And then it will coordinate with the daughter vessel to come by to pick them up. But they were saying that the nature of these is very adaptable. So if something happens, weather or the daughter vessel's unable to, they need to change boat or something like that there, they can communicate very easily to get that adapted and get that changed. And that can be where, I suppose, enforcing it and preventing it can run into a bit of trouble. And they also spoke about it's very easy for them to spoof their location. So that's another kind of, I suppose, challenge that would be faced in there. And then for us, our position on the west of Europe, it's a lot of drugs coming in from South America. This was where I think there was a fear that Ireland might have been seen as the course of least resistance. But I suppose with the recent successes, they're hopeful now that this will kind of put that message out there that that's no longer the case.
But I suppose we don't know what percentage the successes are as part of the overall drugs trade. And can they remotely check anything out? Was there anything discussed about how they can track vessels, or are there any indicators that anything dodgy is going on? Or is it difficult?
For Customs and Gardaí, they were kind of keeping their... It was a press conference. They were keeping their cards maybe closer to their chest.
They don't want to give away their secrets, do they?
That's it. In that regard, but they were saying that this new cutter is going to be a game changer. So it is designated for the southwest and northwest. But the problem was before that previous cutters were kind of coming into issues up around Donegal because we're obviously a lot more exposed weather-wise, and they ended up having to dock a lot and be weathered. So this boat is bigger, it'll be more sturdy, and it has an operations room as well, so it can act as a base while these are being carried out.
And we did recently see, you know, massive amount of drugs washed up and we didn't know that was a couple of years ago. We didn't know, you know, how big of a consignment that was, what went on. Maybe the daughter ship, as you've described it, was disturbed. Was there any reference to those types of instances?
There was. I suppose they were thinking, if to put it in context for us, you know, that was two packages that washed up that was worth $4 million. You know, if that was intercepted and the entire contents was there, how much would that have been worth, I suppose, was the way that they were thinking about it. There was no update on those packages, though I was hoping there might have been some sort of development, but that investigation is still ongoing, so they weren't able to comment any further on it.
Yeah, of course. And I think the source of it was identified as being along the lines of somewhere where you mentioned previously, South America?
South America, yeah. I believe it might have been Colombia area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Was it interesting to sort of be there?
Interesting. So it was in seeing, I suppose, the different approaches that customs would have had to it versus the Gardaí. Now it was all very much the same message. And I suppose it was Tom Talbot, and he is the head of investigations and prosecutions and frontier management division with revenue. I don't know how he gets his title out every day. But he was saying don't take time to mull it over if you see something just ring.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, the currents, you know, it could be, is this, if you ring that in straight away, the whole thing could be done and dusted within 24 hours.
Mm.
If you take half an hour to mull it over, by the time they get there, it could be gone.
Yeah. Wait until you have to chat to someone at home
yeah.
and stuff. And I think, you know, obviously there's a multitude of approaches to this, but it's clear from Detective Superintendent Sean Grant, he sees it as critical with everything else that's going on. The community is critical
yeah.
in spotting what's going on.
That's it. That's it. You know yourself, even if there's a different car driving around your house, you'll be like, oh, who's that?
Yeah.
And it's the exact same thing.
Brilliant stuff, Donal Murray. Thank you so very much indeed, Donal Murray Doherty from our newsroom. Now, as you would have heard earlier, the Environmental Protection Agency has said that although there's been a reduction in levels of excess phosphorus and nitrogen in Ireland's rivers and lakes, the overall water quality of surface water is continuing to decline. Dr. Hugh Feely is Scientific Officer in the EPA Water Management Programme. And this is unfortunate, isn't it, Hugh? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, so today we launched our report, and the report covers 6 years of data collected over the period 2019-2024 across about 4,000 water bodies. So that includes our lakes, rivers, estuaries, coastal waters and groundwaters. So our results show that 52% of our waters are in good or high ecological quality. So that basically means that less than just under half, 48%, are not as healthy and resilient as they should be. And this is an overall 2% decline on the last time we published a report in 2022.
Can I be parochial and ask what the water quality is like in Donegal, if you have a snapshot or detail or whatever you might have?
Yeah, so if we look at rivers in Donegal, so we have about 195 river water bodies in Donegal. And if we look at changes there, so 118 are unchanged, which pretty much means they haven't improved or declined. We see 42 of them have improved, 35 of them declined. So overall, we've seen a net improvement of 7 water bodies. But if we look at Donegal overall, so the national average is 52%. Donegal is just below that at approximately 45%. So Donegal is below the national average in terms of how its rivers and water quality is doing. And then briefly, if we look at lakes, so we have a total of approximately 29 lakes in Donegal, and we've seen a net improvement of 3 lakes across those water bodies.
So when we talk about, say, for instance, a reduction in the likes of, you know, stuff that could be attributed to farming activity, and we then see sort of a continued disimprovement, is that across the board? So in other words, sorry to such a basic question, are we talking averages here, if you know what I mean? So do you average it across the entire country? Go ahead.
Yeah, so we're talking on a national basis because I suppose this is a national quality report. But I suppose it's important to point out that each area will have local issues. and even within a county like Donegal, the urban areas will have urban pressures around wastewater discharges and urban runoff. But in the countryside, there will be other issues relating to nutrients where they're being used, but also pesticides like sheep dip, which can be quite a large problem in areas like Donegal.
All right. And what do we need to do? How can we reverse this trend?
So I suppose there is some positive actions, like you say, so we are seeing some improvements. But what we need to do is fast track this and upscale it. And last year, the Department of Housing, which is the Department over Water in Ireland, released a water action plan with 200 actions across the country. So we need to see these implemented. But we also need to see the Nitrate Action Programme to deliver reductions in nutrient losses. We need to see accelerated and sustained investment by Uisce Éireann to improve their wastewater treatment plants. And we need to look at how we're changing the physical shape and of our rivers and our lakes, because this is having a major impact as well.
Okay. Hugh, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Dr. Hugh Feely, their Scientific Officer in the EPA Water Management Programme. Right, before the news at 10, how would you like something for free? We've got a giveaway in association with Donegal Airport. We've teamed up with our friends there and Aer Lingus to give one lucky listener the chance to win 2 return flights from Donegal to Dublin. So all you have to do is head over to our Facebook and Instagram pages and check out our pinned posts and follow the directions there. Discover direct flights from Donegal to Dublin and Glasgow by visiting donegalairport.ie. It is officially the world's most scientific landing. The winner will be announced on Monday the 20th of October on social channels. Please be aware, any fake accounts on social media, there's nothing we or anyone can do about that, unfortunately. But we will make the announcement formally on the page. There'll be no DMs or any sneaky tactics like that, and no links to click or anything, okay? But it's your chance to win two tickets for free. You don't really have to do anything. You don't even have to text us. All you have to do is go over to the Highland Hub Facebook page and the Instagram page. There's a pinned post there. Follow the direction and you could be in with a chance, or you will be in with a chance to win two return flights. I don't think I've flown from Donegal to Dublin yet. I actually don't think I have. I have flown from Donegal Airport before, but I don't think I've ever actually done the Dublin flight, believe it or not. Okay, anyway, you've got your chance to do it if you've never done it before either. Just go to our Highland Hub Facebook page and our Instagram page. Right, we've got lots coming up after 10, including Community Garda information, that and so much more besides after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.